This episode of the Golf Podcast is brought to you by Squarespace. Squarespace is the easiest way to create a beautiful website, blog, or online store for you and your ideas. Squarespace features an elegant interface, beautiful templates, and incredible 24/7 customer support. Start building your website today at squarespace.com and enter offer code GOLF at checkout to get 10% off. Squarespace, you should.
Welcome to the Golf Podcast, presented by Golficity, where we bring you the tips, instruction, and support you need to get the most out of your golf game. And now your hosts, Frank and Mike.
Welcome to episode 103 of the Golf Podcast. All right, so tonight's topic, we're going to talk about an easy formula that you can use to see more birdie chances. And a quick disclaimer, I understand as we have listeners of all different skill levels. We spent a couple episodes talking on some very beginner stuff. We move sometimes into some a little bit more advanced topics. I understand if you're listening to this, if you're brand new to the game, if you're just working on breaking 100 or something like that, I can understand that birdies might be a long way off, so to speak. It might be the furthest thing from your mind, so to speak, and you're just working on pars. But don't worry, there is something in this for everybody. Trust me, the stuff that we're going to talk about, there's going to be things that you can still take away from your game, even if you're just getting started, and still be able to whittle away at that score a bit. But for our more, advanced players and who are really looking at knocking on the door, breaking par in a couple holes and trying to get those birdie chances, This is the episode you're going to be looking forward to. We've got four great points that we're going to make and that you can use out there and kind of make it a little bit better. But before we get into that, let's just talk about some things we got going on around the site. Mike, one thing that was really exciting on Golficity this morning, I mean, I thought it was funny. I was watching that Stewart Cink where what was it, 96-foot putt across the whole Georgia Tech basketball court today.
Yeah, that's pretty incredible because think about it. It's a basketball court.
I know.
I mean, that had to be perfect. And I don't know if it was his first attempt. I mean, was it?
It was his first. He had one shot at it. There was a student who had a shot at it, and then he was able to. And if either one of them made it, the student got a $25,000 scholarship. Student missed, and then he nailed it.
That's amazing. That's so cool.
Let me ask you this. I wanted to run this by because I've been mulling this over in my head, and maybe it's more of a theoretical thing than anything else. But, and I just humor me here because I understand that it's not simple. It's certainly not a simple putt. But I'm wondering if for a pro, it's a little bit easier than we think. And the reason I say that is, let's say now we're operating at it's Georgia Tech's basketball court, right? So it's not like your local gym. Those things are pristine, right? So I was thinking about it. Let's say, hypothetically, and I don't know the specs on a basketball court down to like how the finish and the floor and everything like that. But if that thing were perfectly flat, no undulations, no breaks, if it was absolutely perfectly flat, think about it like this. Stewart Cink could have essentially picked a target, even if it was just one board, picked a target down that target line, just maybe a foot in front of his ball, put a good roll on it. And like as long bowling. As it stays going that way, he didn't have to worry about speed. I mean, the thing, it wasn't a cup. It was a hole. It was like a cutout in a cardboard cutout about the size of a cup. So a very small target, but the speed didn't matter. So I was thinking about it. It just proves one thing to me. These pros are awesome at sending a ball down a perfect line, right?
That's for sure. I mean, like bowling, I pick that little triangle in front of you, and you just kind of roll it down. I mean, you're right, because that ball is not going to really stop,
It's not going to stop. What would be the question would be whether it would break or not. I mean, if the floor wasn't perfectly level, it's going to break. But if that floor was perfectly level and all he had to do was put it on a straight line towards his target. Now, people are probably laughing. Listen to this. I'm saying all you had to do with quotes because I understand it's a one in a million shot. But
it really
I just
is. Saw,
I just kind of like sometimes try to look for the takeaways from something like that. And I'm just thinking it's really solid proof that these pros, they do that. They pick a spot on their line and they can put a dead roll on something right down that line. And it just shows you how the accuracy you can do with it because the student who did it couldn't hit it. So I don't know. I try to learn a little something from my own putting. You know?
It's interesting to think of it like that. But, you know, it's like a 32-yard putt. Think about 32 yards on a football field.
It's nuts.
And he had to nail that perfectly. I mean, that's amazing.
It really is. But it's cool. And, you know, we have in a couple episodes from now, we've got on the list of things to talk about here. We're going to talk about how to roll your putts, put that good roll. Because we talk about that, you know, a lot on the course where you say, like, sometimes if you're chopping at it or punching at it and that ball doesn't roll true on the putting green, it bounces around because you're not putting a good strike on it. So that's a topic I've been wanting to talk about for a long time. So I'm looking forward to that. That's going to come up soon. But other than that, we got the Super Bowl coming up this week. And just kind of in honor of that, we had our in Golficity, we had our countdown of the top 10 golf celebration dances, which I love to see because it doesn't have to be all, you know, sometimes people think golf is such like a stiff sport, right. But these guys have fun. I mean, if anybody who sways that the other way, it's Ben Crane.
Right, of course. He's a nut, that guy, and it's fantastic.
He's an absolute nut. We ran into him a couple times in the media tent, and like he's, trust me, how you see him on TV is how he is everywhere. That guy's got one mode, and it's on, you know? But really cool. I had a lot of fun checking that one out too, watching those 10 videos. So we'll link to those in the show notes. Mike, do you have anything else before we dive into tonight's topic?
No, I mean, I'm really excited. I want to share this with you because tomorrow I'm actually going to the simulator for the first time. I have no idea what's going to happen to my body. I haven't swung a club in like 3 months.
Yeah.
But, you know, but I've been watching these guys on TV. I've been watching how like sweet and smooth they're swinging. I'm excited to get in there and just try to copy that, you know, and really kind of get off to a good start this year because – hey, last year was good for me. I want to keep it going. And I guess the best thing to do, I mean, we got a warm winter, Frank. I mean, you see today in the Northeast, it's like 60 degrees.
Yeah.
I got a feeling I'm getting all these emails from all these golf courses in my area saying the range is now open. It's February.
I know.
It's unbelievable.
My father and I were talking about it yesterday saying, listen, you know, as soon as we hear those 60 degrees, we're like tempted. Are we going to go out there? I mean, it's temporary greens and stuff, but are we going to go out there? But rain, tons of rain. It was just... It ended up being cooler than 60 because of all the rain, but
right.
It was tempting. But you know what you're saying didn't remind me. As we're not playing right now because it's winter and we're freezing. But the other side of that coin, which I hadn't thought about just till kind of last week, it hadn't dawned on me. We got a lot of people writing from us. You know, yeah, we always say email us at podcast@golfficity.com. We love hearing from everybody. But a lot of the emails, kind of the trend has been they've been coming in from Australia. And then I kind of put two and two together that it's summer there. I don't know why I hadn't thought of this. I'm like, yeah, we're talking about we're freezing. They're in the middle of their, you know, really good playing season right now. So it was really cool to hear from everybody. Actually had one that stood out. I just got an email last night from Chris down in Sydney, Australia. And he was just talking about one concept that I love to hear. I absolutely love this when I hear this from fans, talking about how he was just kind of playing the game casually for a while and then just recently decided to dive in and take it a lot more seriously and dedicate some time to improving the game. And he's seen some really great progress as part of that. I'm very happy that our show has been a part of that and been helping him in any way that we can. But you know, we can't take that much credit. The credit goes to the people who are out there putting the work in like Chris.
Right.
And, it just shows like that's the difference. I mean, I see a lot of guys who get very frustrated with their game, maybe like throwing their clubs around, stuff like that. And then you ask them like, oh, you know, how often are you playing? Are you playing a lot or whatever? And it's like, yeah, I play like on the weekend, like once a week, or they never hit the range. They never do anything like that. And it's like, listen, you can only get so upset then, you know, it's if you really want to be good at this game, it shows. It takes a lot of dedication, a lot of work. So really cool story. Chris wrote to us. He's talking about how he played baseball and that kind of that transition. And that's something we talked about a little bit. One thing that a good point he brought up that I want to clarify, because maybe some other people might have also struggled with this a little bit. We were talking in the last episode about making solid contact and just better ball striking. And I had mentioned in there that even the pros, you know, only make their best contact maybe 50% of the time or solid contact. I want to clarify that a little bit. The most important thing to understand, the takeaway part about that is that it's all relative. You know, with a pro, their miss, so to speak, their scatter of their miss is going to be a lot less drastic than someone who's an amateur. So when they miss, they don't miss as wildly as we do. But relative to their game, they still only make what they would be considered a perfect strike only about that often. So the more important takeaway that I want everybody to understand from that is that if the pros know that and they realize that and they use things like smart course management in order to make sure to compensate for those times when they're going to not hit the ball perfectly, then the same is true for us. You know, it's just the difference being when we miss a little bit worse. But
right.
The biggest and most important thing here is, remember, if you go back to those fundamentals that we talked about, things like balance and turning the shoulders and all those things, you know, working on those, the ball strikes will come and they'll become better and better. So I don't want to get people too hung up on trying to count their best ball strikes so much as work on the things we talked about in the last episode. Work on those fundamentals, hip turn, balance, everything like that, and then just kind of naturally watch as your ball strikes become better, and then the misses become a little bit less bad, so to speak. So he had that great point. I wanted to bring that up because I think that was something that was definitely worth clarifying. And Chris, I appreciate you listening closely on that and giving us the heads up.
You know, it's funny about those guys on tour when they miss. I love seeing it because I think a couple of weeks ago, I think I was watching Jason Duffner on a par three, and I think he put the ball like 18 feet from the pin and he was shaking his head and he like threw his club down. I mean, you and I do that. We're like, sweet, we're on, let's two putt and get our par and get out of here. But no, you absolutely nailed it there. Perfect.
But that's the truth. That to them is a little bit of a miss. So right. They know they're not making their perfect solid contact every time.
Right.
So Mike, real quick, so just shifting quick gears, tonight's episode, Making More Birdie Chances. I love this because like a lot of the stuff we talk about it on Facebook a little bit. We have the new Golficity Facebook group going. And I love a little humor every once in a while. What did one guy say about what the formula was?
He said, and I'm going to quote him, he said, "Isn't the formula just shooting one under par on every hole?"
You know, that's it. That's the show.
That's it. All right. Well, good night, everyone.
Good night, everybody. Just shoot one under on every hole.
That's the formula. You know, Frank, it's only fair that next week we talk about formulas to make more eagles, and then, you know, the week after we could do hole-in-ones if you want.
Exactly. Just two under par, three under par. That's it. Wrap it up. Go home. Mm-hmm. No, so that one I got a good kick out of. But
if
you haven't had a chance to check it out yet, definitely check out our new Facebook group for the Golf Podcast. It's a great way to kind of interact about the show, talk to other listeners. It's free. You know, just go on Facebook and search the Golf Podcast under the groups and you'll see it come up. Join the group. And we like to talk a little bit and get some feedback even before we get into the show about the topics. I think it was maybe a week or two ago I had posted that we were going to be talking about this formula tonight. And it was really cool. A lot of great feedback. You know, people were saying that, like, one that I thought was really cool was a guy mentioning that, you know, he always thinks about these things that we're going to talk about here before he plays, but then it all goes out the window when he goes on the course.
Right.
That's so true of so many of us. So we'll talk a little bit about that. And another guy mentioned how, you know, just playing from the right tees can help, you know, and that I love it. He's thinking outside the box, but he's right. You know, we're talking about strategic things and swing things tonight, but it's true. Sometimes guys are like, why am I struggling so much? But they're not playing the right tees for their handicap. I mean, going way back when we had that episode where we were talking about course design and talking about playing from the right tees, We dove into that a little bit. So good, solid points. A lot brought up in the group that we don't even get to cover here. So if you haven't had a chance to check that out, definitely do that. I'll link to it in the show notes too, golficity.com/episode103. All right, Mike, let's do a quick word from our sponsor, and then we're going to jump right into tonight's topic. This episode of the Golf Podcast is brought to you by Squarespace. Squarespace is a excellent service for building your own website, portfolio, online store. They make things so simple. In fact, Mike, I think just the other day you were talking to your personal trainer. He was looking for a way to build his own website and you had talked to him a little about Squarespace. That's right.
Yeah. And it's the great thing about it is he knows one thing and one thing only, and that's personal training. He knows nothing else about websites, coding, anything like that. And he reached out to me. I pointed him in the direction of Squarespace. He loved it. He ran with it. He did it himself. His site looks so professional. The design looks so professional. There was no coding required. It was easy to use. The tools were all there for him to use. He got a free domain because he signed up for a year. I mean, it's a really cool service. He was thrilled. thrilled with it. And he's really glad that I pointed him that way.
Yeah, that's what I love about it. It's the time to roll it out is dramatically reduced. I mean, before you had to hire a designer, hire a web guy, get everybody working together. You know, a guy like your friend, you know, he just wants to have his business have a little bit more presence. He doesn't have to wait to go through all that and coordinate all that. So that's what's really cool about it. And on the other side of the coin, even if you are good at coding, something like Squarespace is a great way to, you know, make something that looks good and just works. I mean, what so many people don't realize, they think like, I'm just going to build a website and then set it and forget it. Well, that's just not the reality. You know, there's constantly new updates and things like that are coming out that it's just like a work in progress. You're always working on it. Well, with Squarespace, they take care of all that. Everything happens behind the scenes. They've got unbelievable support if you do run into any type of trouble. But you're able to just kind of go in there, make the changes you need and get out and not lose sleep overnight about your website being down or something crazy like that. So if you want to give it a try, you can start your free trial today at squarespace.com. And when you decide to sign up for Squarespace, make sure you use the offer code GOLF, G-O-L-F, to get 10% off your first purchase. Excuse me. Again, that's squarespace.com and offer code GOLF. Squarespace, you should. All right, Mike. So who doesn't want to see some more birdie chances, right? I mean, look, when you start to get into that realm where you're going to post some really good scores, and if you can drop 2-3 birdies around, you know, there's a very good chance at that point you're going to be shooting close to even par or even breaking par. But the reality is, if you're going to make some birdies, you know, we don't make every putt we look at. So in order to increase our birdies that we're making, we've got to see some more birdie chances. You got to give yourself as many chances as possible. Now, again, as I disclaimed at the top of the show, if you're at a point where a birdie is a little bit far off from where you're at, I understand, but there's still a lot of good takeaways here, still a lot of strategies that you can use to improve your game. But just by playing a little bit smarter, we're going to show here, and by just being a little bit wiser with the way that you're attacking the game, you're going to be able to turn those, you know, bogeys and pars into more opportunities to drop those birdies and see a couple of negatives on the old scorecard there.
Mm-hmm.
All right. So Mike, there's four main topics. So let's go through these little by little and let's talk about how we can use them to help our game. The first one, and it may sound obvious and you've heard us talk about it before, but one of the best pieces of advice for maximizing your birdie opportunities, again, might seem obvious, but it's just finding more fairways and greens. I know, laugh. It sounds a lot like that guy who just said, okay, just shoot one under. But the bigger point I'm trying to make here is that things like sacrificing distance in exchange for that ability to keep the ball in play can go a long way. And I've talked before about using just small goals throughout the hole. Like your first goal off the tee might be just to put it at your target in the fairway. Not worrying about the ultimate, like your goal when you get onto the tee box is not going to be to birdie it. The goal is going to be put it in the fairway in a spot that gives me a shot at hitting that green. Second goal is then hitting that green and then trying to make that birdie putt. But what we see too many times is that people, you know, and again, we talked about this in, I think it was episode 99. We talked about three easy ways to hit more fairways, but there are ways you can do that. There are ways you can play a little bit smarter. And you don't have to be afraid to club down even on a par four, you know, just aim, make sure that you're shooting at a target that's going to give you a good chance of getting that ball on the green. And I don't want to spend too much time on this one because again, we did in episode 99, we talked about, clubbing down. We talked about not fighting the wind. We talked about trusting your swing, all these things that add up to hitting more fairways. And trust me, if you can do that, just think of that as step one. You're going to be able to start making more birdies. Again, I don't want to spend too much time on that one because we covered it in so much detail before. The one I want to talk a little bit more about is the par fives.
Okay. Look, absolutely.
Without a doubt, Mike, you know this because you love playing the par fives. You also know it because we're both big fans of the PGA Tour. We see like that's where guys really make strokes is on the par fives.
Right.
And the reality is it's because no matter what, I mean, if as long as, again, with putting on that realm of an understanding of that we're within the scope of a decent player, hitting a green in regulation or hitting a shorter wedge into a par five should be something that's happening on a regular basis. Okay. If you're moving the ball along well, you should be able to hit the wedge. Now, with a par four, it might be a little bit different. You know, there's some lengthy par fours out there where you may be hitting long irons or hybrids or stuff like that into greens. It makes it a little bit more tough to set yourself up for a birdie putt. But if you come up with a good plan of attack for a par five, even if fairly long par five, you should be able to string together two good shots that lead you to having a wedge or a short iron into a green. So that gives you a better opportunity at that green in regulation. So let's just break this down for a second. I had thought about this. I was kind of running some numbers. This is where we're going to talk about a little bit playing smart, right? Versus playing, you know, just kind of erratically. One big thing that I see happen to people a lot on a par five is that they just try to blast the ball off the tee,
right,
and end up in trouble. So I kind of was running a little bit of a quick scenario, two quick scenarios in my head. And also, this is kind of like what we talked about a minute ago, where the guy mentioned playing from the right tees can matter. Well, it's true. Par fives are designed to be long, okay? If you do not have the game to be playing it from the tips at 600 yards, that you really have no business saying, I want to be birdieing it. You know, you got to be playing from the ones that fit your handicap. So let's say you're a mid handicapper at a par five. I'm just going to use some round numbers, is 500 yards, right? First thing you could do, you know, and let's play the smart path in the other way. The smart play would be to pick a target in the fairway, an attainable target, whether it be using your driver or if you wanted to club down, but I don't like to club down personally, unless it makes sense. If the fairway gets very narrow, or if there's a ton of fairway bunkers in my landing zone at my distance, that's the only way I won't hit a driver. Otherwise, I'm hitting a driver, but there's also different ways of hitting your driver, as we all know. I could try to wind up and crush it, or I can just put it smoothly out there and aim at a target. Let's say very conservatively, you hit the ball 220, right? 220 yards, very reasonable with the driver, being able to put it out there. Now you've got next shot, you line up and you move the ball 180 yards down the fairway. So that may be something you can do with a five iron, right? So again, this is very conservative. 220, 180. I'm not going 220 and then picking out my three wood and trying to blast it as close to the green as possible. I'm just going to go 220, 180. What does that leave me? 100 yards in.
Right.
And I've not strained myself too much yet. All I've focused on here is targets, not distance, just targets. And this is something you could do at the range. So this is why people hear people say, how come I could do it at the range, but I can't do it at the golf course? Because they don't realize they're letting themselves be psyched out by the par five. So just creating this quick plan of attack, saying my game plan is 220, round that 220 yard drive, 180 yard, maybe it's a par, five iron, four iron, whatever it may be, hybrid, whatever you're comfortable with, and then 100 yard wedge shot into the green. There's my green in regulation. I've given myself a chance at birdie. The other side of that story is, let's say somebody gets up there and they're thinking 500 yard par five, I'm going to blast it and see what happens, right?
Mm-hmm.
You hit a long drive, let's say 280 yards, right? But at that distance, you're a little bit more erratic. You end up off the fairway. It might not even be dramatic, but maybe you get stuck behind a tree, you know, or something like that. Or you're in a fairway bunker, or you're in a heavy rough that's very hard to get out of. Now you've got to punch out, so to speak. So you're 200, you hit the ball, your drive 280 yards, you punch it 50 yards to get it back into a place where you can put a good swing on it for your third shot. Now you're left with 170 yards into the green. Even though you drove that ball 280, just having to punch the ball back out, you have a 170-yard shot in. That's where we're talking about those long irons, those stuff like that. It's going to result in more missed greens. It's going to result in more unmakeable putts if you do make the green. So the much more conservative route, the smarter play here, would make it so it's set up so you have that third shot is much easier into the green. So what I'm trying to promote here, and I'm not sure if it's coming out the way I have it in my head, but I want to make sure I'm trying to break this down. You want to be setting it up, especially on par five, so that you're hitting targets. Set your targets and hit them as you meander through the par five. It's not just blast it and react. And that's what I see a lot of. People blast it, and then the next shot, how do I then deal with where I'm at now? You know what I mean? So I'm saying put more thought into it up front. Pick that target in the fairway where you want to be, something that you feel that you can hit conservatively a higher percentage of the time. Move the ball down the fairway again, and you're going to have that nice wedge shot into the green. And you'll be putting for birdie a lot more on par fives. And most courses will have, four or five par fives. So there's a lot of scoring opportunities there as long as you play them smart. You know, does that make sense?
Yeah, it makes sense. And you know what I've done a lot, especially season, is take that same example. For me, what I would do is I would do, let's see, for that 500 yards. For me, that's five iron. I do 5 iron, 9 iron, 9 iron. 200, 150, 150. Mm-hmm. Why not do 200, 200, 100? Why not do 200? You know, how do you know about that second shot? Is the goal for that second shot on a par five to get as far as you can? I know you said get it to a comfortable distance, 100 in, whatever the case may be. But if I can get it to within like 30 yards, and even if I'm off the green in a rough, and I have a 30-yard rough, you know, chip shot, do I go for that or I do it for the 100-yard fairway? What's the play there?
Well, A, you have to go with what you're confident in. But right. This brings up a really cool thing that I want to talk about, because we're going to have a whole show on this soon. We're going to be talking about half and less than full swing wedge shots, mm-hmm. and they're pretty darn complex. Now, if it's me, I personally, as crazy as it might sound, I feel much more comfortable with a 120-yard shot into a green from a fairway than I am with a 30-yard or 40-yard shot into a green from a heavy rough. And I'll tell you why. I know without a shadow of a doubt that my pitching wedge, I can hit from a consistent surface like a fairway. I know that a full swing for me is a 120-yard shot. I'm comfortable with it. I don't have to alter anything with my swing. Now, half wedge shots are their own tricky little thing.
Right.
And we'll get into that in a future episode, because I want to talk about how that, you know, there's different ways you can make those a little bit easier, but those require tons of practice, because now you're gauging how long of a backswing do I take? How much of a coil do I take? All those types of things. And then you're introducing all of those extra things that now the pros, yeah, they make it look very easy, but they practice from every distance all day constantly. If you don't practice that 30-yard shot all the time, there's a very good chance you're not going to have the right distance. And the other part of that is, as soon as you enter rough into the equation, an inconsistent surface, there's always a much more higher chance of a mistake. How many times, Mike, have you hit a wedge from the rough and you cut under the ball?
Right.
You know, don't reach, even at 30 yards, you don't reach the green because you sliced underneath it, or the ball doesn't come out the way you thought it would, or it flies. You hit a flyer that comes out better than you thought.
Mm-hmm, mm-hmm.
So what I'm saying is, I don't think that there is enough of a reason to just try to blast it and react. I don't think you always do want to move it. Just move it just for the sake of moving it. I think you want to work backwards. Look at where, you know, and that's where you see the pros too, all the time looking at the yardage books and kind of like looking at it backwards. Like, where do they want their approach shot to come from? Where do they want that last shot to come from? And then they set up the rest of their shots around that, you know? So yes, could you hit 200, 200, you know, 100? Yeah, you could, or 250 and then break it down a little bit different than that. You could, but I think more so play your higher percentage shots. You know, if you're like me, I don't hit my 3 wood as well as I hit my 4 iron. So I'm going to try to avoid that, because I don't mind the difference in that 20, 30 yards. So again, I just want to get people thinking. Everyone's game's going to be different. Someone else out there might say, Frank, I'm a lot more comfortable with a 30 yard shot. I hit those all the time. I'm always 30 yards out, so I'm used to it. Or I practice that, whatever. Fine. Then that might be the right answer for you. But what I'm saying is, let's just give it more thought. Rather than, I see too many times people go up to a par five and just say, first things first, let me blast this as far as I can. And then wherever it is, we'll see what we can do with it there. That's what I'm trying to get away from, is that mindset, because you can end up getting yourself in more trouble than it's worth.
Yeah, all good stuff. I mean, I might actually try that this year and just, you know, really focus on finding the fairway, you know, setting myself up for that shot. And I'm curious at the end of each round, see how many birdies I make. Mm-hmm. You know, I'll report back to you. Yeah, see how it worked.
Definitely. Mm-hmm. All right. So the next point here we want to talk about is just becoming a wedge master. You know, there's really no substitute for great wedge play. You brought up Jason Duffner, I think, earlier. That guy is, you know, sick with his wedges. And you see that he sticks so many pins. I mean, that's really carried his game quite a bit, because he's not super long off the tee. But there's different places where people score. But This is one of those areas that you can see a lot of improvement in your score if you work, put the work in to do the improvement in the actual execution. So what I mean by that is it's definitely worth it to get out there and just do a lot of wedge practice. I mean, sleep with the thing if you have to, because if you really take account of it, how many times you use your wedge in a round, it's quite often. You really want to, and if you're going to focus on one area, focus a lot on that wedge game from 100 yards and in. I spent a lot of time working on that. I think that's where the game is won or lost, honestly, is 100 yards and in. There's a lot of variations. We just started talking about it, half swings, part swings, whatever it may be. And we'll talk about that more in a future episode. But if you really want to start making and, you know, or seeing those birdie chances, you're really going to have to be hitting the dance floor. And to do that, you're going to have to learn to control your wedge. You know, sure. Are there going to be times you're hitting the green from those longer distances out? Absolutely. But as your game improves, I mean, the ideal situation is to be hitting wedges into greens. We just set up a whole example of how you could do it on a par five. You know, on a par four, it's going to be a little bit harder because you're going to, you know, especially on a longer par four, chances are you're going to need to have a pretty good blast off the tee. You know,
right.
But that's where it also comes in playing the right tees for your handicap. But
sure.
Again, a soft, smooth swing where you can control that ball flight with the wedge shot, that's going to be important. If necessary, consider choking down on the grip. You know, if you need to have a little bit more control with your wedges, you can move the ball back in your stance to keep the flight down a little bit. Sometimes it's a little bit harder to control if you get too much loft out of it. So there's a lot that you can do, but I would say, and there's so much information out there. We've talked about wedge shots before. I'm sure we'll talk about it more. I could do a whole episode on it, so I won't get into too much of it. I just want to, again, I want to bring your attention to certain things and areas where you can practice. This is a big one. Make sure you're good at your wedges. Make sure you're really working on that 100 yards and in, and you will start to see a lot more birdie chances because you'll be hitting a lot more greens.
Yeah, good point.
All right, the last point we have here, and this is something we talked about a little bit before. I think we talked about this in course management when we talked about that in a couple episodes ago. And a lot of this, if you look at it, it really kind of lends itself to that. A lot of these points we're making talk about course management and strategy and playing smart, which makes sense because that's what it really comes down to when you want to start playing some smart golf. But one important thing is trying to favor the low side. You know, not all birdie putts are created equal. You know, even putts of the same length, you know, you're far more likely to make a 10-foot birdie putt that's running uphill as opposed to a 10-footer that's running away or down, you know, down the slope away from you. So you can be a lot more aggressive with those uphill putts. So think about that. When you are positioning your approach shots, your wedge shots and things like that, try to, again, it's not just, I'm trying to get people away from that, just hit it and react. I'm trying to get towards that, pick a target and mm-hmm. go for it, you know, with as much deadly accuracy as you can have. And a good part of picking that target is taking a look at that topography, that lay of the land. Look at the green. Is it sloping towards you? Is it sloping away from you? Where it is, you know, and look for a spot that you can hit on a slope below the pin. You know, the pros do this all the time because they would much rather, trust me, be putting uphill than downhill. Same right. is true if you miss the green by a little bit. Okay. If you miss it, you know, just off the fringe, nobody wants to have that downhill running chip, you know, towards the pin where you're just hoping you hit the pin. You know, otherwise you end up on the other side of the green and have to putt back up anyway. It's a much, you can be much more aggressive with your chip. And you have a lot more margin for error if you miss on the low side and you're chipping uphill, you know?
Yeah.
So, and the same goes for putting. So that's a big one. That's definitely a big one.
Yeah. It makes me think about that late Monday finish this week where at Torrey Pines on the 72nd hole, KJ Choi had a chance. He had a chance to tie Snedeker there with a birdie putt on 18. Yeah. And he knew because he put the ball on the top ledge and it was a long downhill putt. He knew the minute that ball hit the green that it was game over.
Yep.
He still had a birdie putt chance to tie, but he knew, Snedeker knew. You know, but these guys are so good, you know, putting that ball, you know, right below the hole. I mean, we hear the announcers talking about it all the time. Oh, you put the ball below the hole, it should be an easy putt, it should be an easy uphill. But, you know, a lot of us, we don't think about it. I certainly don't think about that at all. I'm just concerned about getting that ball on the green.
Right.
But, you know, it makes perfect sense. You know, set up that next shot make it easy to make the birdie.
Pick that smaller, more narrow target, and you'll be surprised how much your execution will follow that. You know,
right.
And it's like you said earlier about the pros, like we're shocked when they're disappointed with certain things. But in that case, it's because, you know, where we might be happy we just hit the green, it's because they know what they have ahead of them. You know, they know that when they end up on the high side like that, they've got a lot of work to do just to save their par. So that's an important one. And that's where you can just kind of play it smart. But I'm telling you, the amount of improvement you'll get, and so many golfers focus on swing thing, they're getting their, you know, swing better and all this. Yeah, I get it. But the amount of improvement you'll see just from applying a little bit more strategic thought to the way you approach your round and the way you approach each hole is going to give you more, not only more birdie chances like we're talking about here, but it's just going to give you a lot better outlook on the game. You're going to start to understand it a little bit more, and you're going to be able to score a lot better. So if you take nothing else away from this episode, take that away. Understand that you got to come up with that plan. You got to go do that, and then just go out there and execute. As soon as you start to move from that, hit it, and then react to what happened and start to move towards, aim for a target, go for it, get as close as possible. And if you miss by a little bit, you miss, you know,
right.
That's when you're going to start to see that real dramatic improvement.
Yeah, it all makes perfect sense. I mean, I just need to focus on that when I'm out there.
Right. And there's got that. That's another thing. You got to remember to do it. Like you said, like
right.
in the Facebook group where one guy had mentioned, like, this all makes sense. I think about all this stuff until I get out there.
Right.
And then it all goes out the window. Well, you know what? Whatever you got to do to remind yourself, you know, sometimes guys will, if you're playing with a yardage book, you know, they'll maybe make notes on it. The par fives before you get out there. So that you can't even, I mean, let's say you're playing in a local tournament or something like that. The night before, you know, even if you don't have a yardage book, take a printout from online of the course and create a plan. You know, for that, those holes, especially for the par fives, where you want to put your drive, where you want to put your second shot so that you're able to have a nice wedge shot into the green. And
right.
then stick to it. Cause sometimes people freeze up when they get out there. It's just like, I'm on the par five. They don't think like, this is not the time to think. It's just to get time out to get up there and tee off, you know? So do it ahead of time, you know, and that's a great way you can do it. Or try to learn from your mistakes. If you do that, you know, try to decompress it afterwards and be like, you know what, on that one hole, if instead of trying to take it high up over the trees and cut that corner and take as much of the fairway as I could, if I just backed my drive off a little bit, you know, stayed to the other side of the trees, just put it in the fairway, maybe 50 yards shorter than my biggest drive. Well, then I wouldn't have been punching out. I wouldn't have been stuck behind that tree. I would have been worse out of bounds. There goes your whole chance at a birdie on a par five if you go OB on the drive. So again, strategy plays a huge part in this game, and that's why a lot of people love it. That's what I love about the game. You know, it's like chess out there. So mm-hmm. just be smart, and you'll be able to have some really good scores.
Yeah, absolutely. Good stuff.
All right, Mike, that's everything I have for tonight. How about you? Anything else you want to add?
No, I'm excited for this. I love this Waste Management Phoenix Open this week.
Yeah, that's always fun.
Yeah, we have to get out there one day. I mean, I'd love to play that course, you know? I mean, just that desert course. I mean, even if we can't play it, just going to that event with that electric crowd. So I'm looking forward to that. I'm looking forward to playing tomorrow.
Yeah.
You know, that'll be good. And I'll report back what's working for me because I'm going to take a lot of this into the simulator tomorrow. All the stuff we've been talking about over the last few weeks.
Yeah.
And I'm going to try to, you know, moving that divot forward, focusing on that and things like that.
Where are you going to play? What course are you going to play in the simulator?
I don't know. I was just thinking about that while we were talking. It's funny. Yeah. I zoned out for a minute going, am I going to play Sawgrass? Maybe I can play. I think TPC Scottsdale's there, so maybe I'll just play it there.
That'd be cool. Yeah, there is.
Yeah.
Yeah.
There you go.
I remember we did play that. It's not as fun, though, when they don't have the stadium.
No, so. I know. It's not.
Like, you get up to 16, like on the simulator, you're so disappointed.
There's nothing there.
Like, it looks like every other hole. And you're like, come on, where's the stadium? They got to, like, put, you know, it's a computer. Put the fans in. Make it fun, you know?
Exactly.
But yeah, and I was talking this morning to one of the writers for Golficity. He contributes a lot of fun stuff for us. And he actually said he went to three times he went to that tournament. And he said it's even more fun than it looks on TV. He had a blast.
I bet guys are throwing beer cans onto the 16th hole. It's crazy.
Not like anything you see the rest of the season, that's for sure.
Right. But it's good for golf, I think, you know?
20,000 people on one hole. That's really cool.
Mm-hmm.
It really is. All right. So that's everything we have tonight. Like I said, we're going to be back next week. And in the next couple of weeks, especially, you know, going into February, March, we're trying to get everything in order and get ready for this upcoming season, at least for us. For you, you guys on the other side of the world who are already in your summer, that's awesome. I'm as jealous as you can imagine. But we got a lot of great topics. Like I said, we're going to be talking about all different aspects of your game, everything from the short game to distance stuff and strategy and mental game, a lot of stuff to cover. So stick with us. If you haven't done so already, hit the subscribe button on iTunes. That'll give you that quick reminder each week when we have new episodes. And if you can't listen to us on iTunes, we're everywhere else, on Spreaker, Stitcher, SoundCloud, TuneIn, iHeartRadio. A lot of ways you can listen to us. And as always, you can visit us on the web at golfcity.com, where you can listen to every podcast episode all the way back to number one. So check us out there. And as always, shoot us those emails, podcast@golfcity.com. We want to hear about the progress you're making. And we love it because it's great feedback to know that anything we've done here has helped everybody out there, because that's why we do it. All right. So we'll see you all again next week.